How much money do you lose every time you miss a customer call? With a Buzz CRM, you never have to worry about that again. Their system automatically texts missed calls and engages leads instantly using conversational AI. It turns your missed opportunities into booked appointments automatically. It's a complete game changer for local businesses. Secure your access today for a massive discount at thebuzzcrm.com. That's thebuzzcrm.com.
My friends, I am Vivian McPeak, and this is HempPresent. If you have feedback or would like to suggest a guest or topic for HempPresent, email me at HempPresent@gmail.com. Today on the podcast, we're diving into a story that exposes the painful contradictions of America's cannabis laws in an era when cannabis is legally sold in dispensaries across much of the country. Today's story is a reminder that while the cannabis industry booms, the war on drugs continues to destroy the lives and families of Americans. Joining me today are two women fighting to change that. Alicia Deals is a trailblazer in Arizona's cannabis industry and a leading advocate for equity and justice. Drawing on her personal experience navigating the legal system after her father, Robert Deals, received an 18-year sentence for a cannabis-related conviction, she's made it her mission to reform the industry and help those still incarcerated for marijuana offenses. Alicia is a social equity license holder and the first Black woman to own and operate a cannabis dispensary in Arizona. She partnered with Cookies, the international cannabis brand founded by Burner, to open the state's first Cookies dispensary in Tempe. And Caitlin DiMaggio is the founder and managing attorney of DiMaggio Law Office, a Scottsdale-based law firm dedicated to defending the rights and dignity of individuals navigating Arizona's criminal legal system. I have them both with me. Welcome, Alicia and Caitlin.
Thank you. Thank you.
My pleasure. Alicia, can you share with us who Robert is, not just the person who was sentenced, but your father, the man behind the headlines?
Oh, most definitely. Robert Deals is a wonderful man. As I've explained, he is a father, a grandfather, a veteran, and a community leader. He is a person that has always stood as a rock in my life and is ready and willing to help anyone, and is unfortunately in a very harsh situation that just doesn't in any way express who he truly is.
And Caitlin, Robert received an 18-year prison sentence for a cannabis-related conviction. Can you walk us through what led to such a severe punishment in a time when cannabis is legal in so many states, and just give us your general thoughts on his situation?
Yeah, I can. So, you know, back when Robert was sentenced and when he was convicted, weed was not legal here in Arizona. And so it was really treated similarly to many other drugs. Methamphetamine, fentanyl wasn't really big back then, but, heroin, it was treated similarly to all these other drugs. And so the sentences that people were receiving for these kinds of substances were very high, similar to what you would see today with methamphetamine, heroin, that kind of thing. And so what's really, really sad is that for marijuana convictions today that are based on possession only, people are able to get those convictions set aside, expunged. And that has really impacted their sentences in the sense that, you know, if they were convicted of this and it was used as an aggravator in their sentence, then they are able to get their sentence reduced. What's sad about Robert's case is that he was convicted of marijuana sales. And so sales related, even though really there's absolutely no evidence that he actually sold marijuana, he was just simply in the wrong place at the wrong time. But regardless, what's really, really sad is that for marijuana sales convictions, there's no relief like there is for marijuana possession convictions in the state of Arizona. And so he got this incredibly harsh sentence. And, you know, I just kind of want to speak to for a second here what Alicia was saying about Robert and the kind of person he is. He is one of the kindest, sweetest, knowledgeable, intelligent clients I've ever worked with. And to have him wasting nearly two decades of his life in prison is truly a travesty. There is no comprehensible reason for him to spend this long in prison for this marijuana-related offense. And it's especially ironic because Alicia now sells weed legally, right? It's legal now. And so what she's doing legally and ethically is now is being prosecuted for her father for two decades. I mean, I think the irony of the situation is just so incredible. It's just so sad. He's a wonderful person. He's wasting years and years and years of his life in prison needlessly.
Gosh, that's what's criminal, right? Is that this drug war, this war on cannabis. Alicia, what year did your father, what year was he convicted? And as a daughter watching your father face nearly two decades behind bars for something that's now sold in storefronts across America and that now you're involved in the industry, can you just describe how that emotional journey has been like for you and your family?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been very, very hard. So the initial offense incident happened in 2011. He fought the case in county for nearly 2 years. As Caitlin said, this instance came shortly before cannabis was legalized in the state of Arizona. And at the time, they had taken it upon themselves to start doing things in which they called a reverse sting operation. As she said, he was convicted of sales, whereas he sold nothing. In the details of it, some undercover officers approached some colleagues of his, told him, you know, we have some great cannabis for sale. We're going to bring it directly to you. They, in short, recruited him. He's there. They're doing what they're doing. And oh, surprise. We're the police, and now you are convicted of possession with intent to sell. Come on now. And it was wrong. It was malicious prosecution. He attempted to fight back legally. As she says, he's a very brilliant mind. He has done a great deal of legal work from the very beginning on own, fighting it. And it snowballed. Prosecution became personally offended, I say, and they went extremely harsh on him. And it turned into this huge ordeal. I mean, at the time he was sentenced, the average conviction for manslaughter was only about 12 years. The time he got is astronomical. It in no way fits the crime or the situation. And as she said, ironically enough, here I am now, 12, 13 years later, selling cannabis. And it's a very harsh reality, whereas now myself and many others are making a living, a profit off of it. But my father's still in prison. You know, it's the hardest irony to live with. And before this program, before I was awarded a license, cannabis was a tragedy in our lives. And I tell people, I have seen both sides of it. I have seen what cannabis can do to you, and I have seen what cannabis can do for you. I'm very fortunate and grateful to be an Arizona cannabis provider, but it is very hurtful to watch and see my father still be in prison and for such an astronomical amount of time. He's a senior citizen at this point. He's a grandfather, a husband of over 30 years, a father. It's very hard to digest.
Wow. And of course, communities of color have been disproportionately targeted and incarcerated in this this drug war in general, right? Caitlin, you represent clients across a wide range of criminal and post-conviction matters, including domestic violence, sexual offenses, DUIs and parole hearings, wrongful conviction and sentencing challenges. How did you first get involved in Robert's case, and what drew you to become involved in his fight?
Yeah, so I'm really fortunate to be a member of what is a really incredible criminal defense community here in Arizona, specifically post-conviction community. There are very limited amounts of attorneys who are willing to do this kind of work because it's grueling. It is hard. It is time intensive, and it is devastating because you lose all of the time. You could be the best attorney in the world, and you could still lose a case that you think you should win because the odds are stacked against you. And, you know, the law, especially here in Arizona, is heavily weighed in favor of sustaining a conviction, regardless of whether it's a wrongful conviction or not. And so it's been a devastating practice to work in. There's very few attorneys willing to do it. And so I'm a member of this community, post-conviction community, and one of the members of that community connected me with Alicia. And what I think is so incredibly sad is, you know, Alicia got this this license to sell marijuana here in Arizona, which has given her some financial resources. And had she not had those resources, her family would not be able to afford to retain an attorney. And what an incredible waste of human life that Robert Deals is sitting in prison and wouldn't be able to afford an attorney to represent him in the way that I've been able to. And it's only, you know, by the virtue and fortune of his daughter that he was able to retain me as an attorney. And I wish I could do all of these cases pro bono. But unfortunately, you know, I can't. And so anyways, she was connected to me through the post-conviction community. I'm very grateful she found me. I have just loved working with her and her family. They are just the most incredible people. And it's been heartbreaking to see what has happened to them, what has happened to their family. And we have looked at every possible legal avenue and have been, you know, really had the door shut in our faces over and over and over again. But we're going to keep pushing. We're going to keep trying because that's what we do. And, you know, Alicia is just an incredibly resilient woman and she's not going to give up. And Robert is the same way. He's just resilient and dedicated to the cause, and he's not going to give up either. So I'm grateful to be involved.
Wow. Wow. Alicia, you've become an outspoken advocate since your father's sentencing, collaborating with the Last Prison Project, a national nonprofit working to free individuals imprisoned for cannabis offenses. And you continue to advocate for your father's release. What have been some of the biggest challenges and maybe also the most powerful moments in fighting for your dad's freedom?
Well, to highlight one thing that Caitlin said, she's part of a very small community of attorneys that are even willing to work behind such a case and in such a matter. Before we were connected with her, it was heartbreaking, devastating. There were about half a dozen attorneys who literally did nothing but steal. We did a lot just to try and get legal help. And it's heartbreaking that they'll just take money and do nothing and then act like you're the problem. It's quite disgraceful. Yeah, we were very, very lucky to find her. Partnering with Last Prisoner Project has been phenomenal. They have been huge advocates. They have taken it to a whole nother level. And as crazy as it may sound, you know, just our story is hard. It's very harsh, but working with Last Prisoner Project and then even just people that my father has personally connected with in there has opened my eyes to the true reality that there are people facing even harsher sentences than our own. You know, people have gotten life. They have gotten 30 plus years, and it makes you sad and grateful at the same time. In some ways, ours is really hard, but at least we've made it. And now through it all, now I have a platform to raise my voice for others. Life Changers, as I tell people, is not just a cliche name, and it was not just to change my own life. It's to help others. We really see the need that, as you say, the war on drugs has ravished our community. And I'm grateful to be a part and be a voice to be heard for change.
Well, sorry to keep saying that. It's just so moving. This story is just so emblematic of the just, you know, widespread injustice that is still happening. And it's hard to believe. You know, I always believed that legalization meant there weren't people in jails and prisons for cannabis. You know, I see this more as commoditization. And it's just surreal that, you know, people are going to stores, brick and mortar stores, and buying an ounce at a time and getting in their car and driving away. And they don't have to look in the rearview mirror because there's nobody behind them while there's people still in jails and prisons. But I don't need to tell you guys that. You know it better than I do. Caitlin, can you tell us about any legal efforts, clemency campaigns, petitions currently underway, or anything to help Robert get home sooner? Or better question, I guess, is what can people listen to this podcast? Is there a way they can help?
Oh, gosh. Yes. Okay. So we filed a petition for post-conviction relief, which is the first step in getting relief in the Arizona courts. So we filed that. That was denied. We filed a appeal to the Arizona Court of Appeals. It's actually called a petition for review. That was also denied. That denial was particularly disappointing because it was a essentially three-sentence denial. There was no real reasoning as to why we weren't successful. And that was pretty heartbreaking. The latest effort that we have been trying is filing for clemency. So we filed for clemency with the Board of Executive Clemency here in Arizona. And they denied our petition for clemency. They won't even forward it to the board. So, excuse me, I should whine a little bit. We filed a petition for clemency. What happens is that the time computation unit at the Arizona Department of Correction receives that petition, and then they decide whether or not we have grounds to have it moved forward to the Board of Executive Clemency. And so we got stopped at the very first try. Basically, the time computation unit said that Robert Deals is not eligible for clemency. Basically, he has to serve his sentence day for day. And so what we've been doing, and one of the, you know, creative efforts we're trying, is just saying, look, you know, at the very least, it should be forwarded to the Board of Executive Clemency, but also the governor in Arizona, Katie Hobbs, has the ability to grant this. We believe that. So in Arizona, we have a process where it has to go through the Board of Executive Clemency. If it's approved by them, then it goes to Katie Hobbs for signature. But I do believe that she has the constitutional authority to grant any petitions for clemency. So that's the latest push we're trying right now. We've tried many other things. We've tried to contact the Maricopa County Attorney's Office directly asking for justice in this case. We were met with roadblock after roadblock. I think the thing that might be the most helpful would be to write to our governor, Katie Hobbs, and ask for clemency for Robert Deals. He deserves it. He's a kind, loving, generous individual. There is no reason he should waste another day of his life in jail.
I mean, theoretically, shouldn't the governor be able to even pardon him if she wanted to? I know politically that, you know, might be challenging.
Right, you would think so. It does go through the Board of Executive Clemency, and the prison is putting up a roadblock and won't even let us get there. So that's the struggle we're having right now. And I'm looking into novel legal constitutional arguments to make in that regard. And Robert and I are working closely on that. He's very intentional. He's very intelligent. And so he and I have been working on what we can do to change the way things work, not only for him, but for everybody. I mean, that's the kind of person Robert is. He helps people in prison. He has sent me other clients. He has really, you know, advocated for other individuals in prison. Like, he's the kind of person that is just so generous. He doesn't just think about himself. He thinks about, how can I help others in my situation? And I think that's just what's so special about him, and what makes me want to work even harder and fight even harder for him, because he's just so wonderful. He just doesn't deserve this.
And he's been, you know, convicted of basically a victimless crime to begin with.
Right.
That sounds like he didn't even do. Yeah. I hate to ask this of both of you, but do you think that race could be a factor in this?
I do. I'll say it plainly. And if we just be honest about the entire war on drugs in and of itself, you know, coming from, you know, the 60s, 70s, where it was the hippie era and it was cannabis, to where more so inner city, and it was people of color that had it, it became marijuana. Ironically enough, in my father's case, the undercover officers that approached them posed as non-English speaking Hispanics. They posed as immigrants, and they didn't go to North Scottsdale or Paradise Valley. They went to West Phoenix to sell it to other Hispanics and Black men of color. It's undeniable to say that race is not a factor in the targeting area of it, as well as in the sentencing. when we just look at sentencing with people of color versus a majority or non-minorities, it's an astronomical difference. And I do believe if my father looked different, that this wouldn't have been as drastic. And it's many other things, statistical numbers that show the difference. Just the fact of me even being awarded a license, you know, statistical numbers, you're 99% more likely to catch a charge as a person of color as of where to ever own and operate any form of successful business in cannabis. You're more likely to go to jail than ever be able to sell it legally. And as I said, I'm the first woman of color in the state of Arizona. There's over 7 million people here. It's been legal for well over a decade, and I'm the very first. So yeah, I will boldly say color does matter in cannabis.
Clearly, we have a lot more work to do. And congratulations on your, you know, that sad designation. But it's a it's great icebreaker. Along those lines, Alicia, just quickly, can you describe your journey into the cannabis industry and how your father's plight influenced you to do that, or did it?
Yeah, gladly. He was my driving force for it. And I will say again, it's plainly a divine opportunity. Ironically enough, we formed Life Changers on 11/11/2021. Out of the 1,500 applicants, there were only 26 licenses awarded. I was number 11. At the time of the drawing, my father was in the 11th year of his sentence. There was numbers allotted to your application. It's about a 20-digit alphanumerical code. In the middle of this code, there is the number 11. So there's nothing anyone can tell me that this is not a divine opportunity to bring change. And I've been doing my very best to do so. So we were blessed enough to come into the industry and come in the grandest fashion, also opening the first cookie store. We had a record-breaking grand opening. People came days early, lined up around the block. It's been a great and miraculous journey. It's underladen with the sadness of him still being there, but has given us the opportunity and voice for change.
He must be very proud of you, I imagine. Caitlin, what's the status of Arizona's cannabis laws? What are they right now?
Yeah, so marijuana is legal to possess in the state of Arizona. It's not legal to sell still in the state of Arizona, unless you have a license, of course, like Alicia does. And even with possession, you're only able to possess a certain amount, and anything over that threshold is considered for the purpose of sale. So possession for the purpose of sale is still not legal.
Oh, really? So you're automatically guilty of possession with intent to deliver, or if you have a certain amount?
Correct.
Wow.
Correct. Yes. Right. So, I mean, we've come a long way, but we certainly have not gotten to where we need to go. So it is amount based. A certain amount is legal to possess. And they are expunging any convictions related to the possession of marijuana. But again, it's only under that certain amount. And I'm going to look that up because I don't remember how many ounces that is off the top of my head. But yes, so they will expunge your sentence and conviction if it is less than a certain amount that you possess and were convicted of. And then the state of Arizona has categories of offenses. So you're either a category one offender, a category two offender, or a category three offender. And the level of offender you are is based on prior convictions. So if you have more than three convictions, you're a category three offender. And so what has happened is that if we get a conviction expunged for a marijuana offense that was used as putting somebody in a category three felony, then we have been able to get their sentence reduced by saying, look, they should have been a category two offender, or they should have been a category one offender, but instead they were a category two because they got this felony for possessing a little bit of marijuana or a marijuana pipe even. And So that's also been something that's been really sad, is that, you know, these people have had their sentences enhanced pretty significantly for having a pipe with some marijuana residue when they should have served a much shorter sentence. And so we're trying to correct those wrongs. The difference between a Category 1 and a Category 2 and a Category 3 offender is significant. So we've been just kind of combing through, and I've been working with the Arizona Justice Project here in Arizona to just kind of comb through those cases that were enhanced by a prior marijuana conviction, to see, you know, whether or not we can get their sentences reduced so they can come home to their families, as they should. But in some cases, and many, many cases, probably the majority of cases, the damage that's been done can't be undone. And that's especially true for Robert.
Yes, yes. We've got a little under 5 minutes left. Alicia, how is Robert doing? I mean, is my math right that he has about 7 years left?
Yeah, he's in about the 14th year now. So yeah, it's a little over five or so. Right? Period. Right. It's too long. It shouldn't be there. Should have never been there this long. But as you say, he's so resilient. He stands resilient. And people in such harsh situations, you know, generally you can become jaded. You can become angry, especially looking at the fact that now my daughter's selling, but you still left me here. But he's unchanged, unwavered. He still stands in great spirits. He gives me hope every day. Anything that bothers me, I'm like, look, my dad's not sad, so I have no right to be upset about anything. He's just standing strong, resilient, hopeful, and believing every day something will change. We're believing that Ms. Hobbs will do the right thing. We've reached out to her many times, and we would hope that anyone else listening that's moved by this story would help send Katie Hobbs a letter. Last Prisoner Project does have a link for a pre-written letter. You can add your information. It'll go directly to her. The more noise we make, the higher we raise our voice, I believe the more change we can all make together.
We're at about 3 minutes. Caitlin, what final thoughts would you like to leave us with?
Yeah, I just want to say one thing that hasn't been brought up yet that I think is really important to this story. Robert Deals is a veteran. He served our country. He did so valiantly. And he was diagnosed with PTSD after his service, as many of our veterans have been. I think that's a big part of this story. You know, a lot of people use substances to cope, and that, you know, that's not even Robert's story. He wasn't, you know, a drug addict or anything like that. He was at the wrong place at the wrong time. And so I just, you know, want to leave this with this idea that this is genuinely one of our upstanding human beings. He should have been treated differently. He served our country. He did everything that an upstanding person is supposed to do. And his wife has stood by him through all this. His family has stood by him through all of this. They have been supportive since day one. I have reviewed all of the records. His family has been standing behind him for decades. And certainly the past couple decades since he became embroiled in this legal battle. And so I don't think that I can get over or really express to you the true tragedy of the situation, the true tragedy of these people losing their father, their brother, their you know, spouse,
yeah,
for decades. It is just so incredibly sad. But what a wonderful person he is. What a wonderful person Alicia is. What an incredible battle she has taken on. And she has really, blazed through this legal battle every step of the way. She has been supportive and caring and an advocate for her father. What an incredible thing. What an incredible story. I'm just so grateful to be part of it.
Alicia, we have a little under a minute, so it's quickly, what would you like to leave us with?
Thank you all for listening. I hope people are touched by this story. I hope it brings light to the reality of cannabis, what it has done to communities, how it has evolved, and so much more that we have left to do. And I ask that you speak out for change. We've all been affected in different ways. We have love for the plant, and there are people that are still suffering. So speak up for anyone that you know. And thank you for listening to my story.
Alicia Deals and Caitlin DiMaggio, you are exceptional people, and you articulated all of this so well. Robert's so lucky to have you fighting for him. Good luck on your fight to bring justice to his situation.
Thank you, Vivian.
Yeah, thank you so much for having us. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure. The Hemp Present intro music is 7 Mile Beach by Joanne Rand, and the outro music is Take Back the Plant by Sticker Bush. We're going to see you next time, folks. Stay strong. Come back. Marijuana!